Tonight was the Fright Night edition of Dynamite. Of course, we are only a few days away from Halloween. So, of course, the Fright Night episode. And there was a lot that went on tonight's episode. You know what? I actually liked this show. I did. I think I like Dynamite more tonight than I have, as far as a complete episode, in a very long time. And what we had tonight here at the end of the night was a number one contenders match to decide who would go on to wrestle Hangman Adam Page at Full Gear for the AEW World Championship. As predictable a finish as you could ask for, the moment the match was announced, it was very obvious who was going to be getting the title match. But we had what was an excellent four-way match. It was fun getting there, predictable though the finish may have been. But then we had at the very end of the show, and this was a show-long storyline that they had. Because if you remember, many years ago on Dynamite, we had Hangman Page revealing himself. He was dressed up in a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume. So we had that Marshmallow Man costume back on the show tonight, featured in multiple segments backstage, and all was the build up to what we got here at the end of the show. And remember what Hangman said last week? He wasn't there live, although he was on Collision, but he wasn't on Dynamite. But they did have that post-match promo from WrestleDream where he promised that he was going to make Samoa Joe's life a living hell after Joe turned on him and the ops attacked him at the pay-per-view, and he got his revenge tonight. And I thought the way that they did it at the end of the show, as predictable as it was to see Samoa Joe win in the main event, they threw us a little bit of a curveball, and I thought the way they did it was actually very clever, where he slipped into the ring in disguise to attack Samoa Joe and the ops. And I actually thought that that was very well done. I enjoyed the ending of this show because it looked like it was just going to end and nothing really big was going to happen. But I did like that little twist, which I will get into when we get there. So the World Championship match now is set for Full Gear. We also know who the number one contenders are going to be for the AEW men's tag team titles. That will be FTR. They are going to be challenging Brodito on the pay-per-view for those titles. We have the Blood and Guts match, which is coming up before Full Gear. We got Blood and Guts in Greensboro on November 12th. And we now know there will be a men's and a women's Blood and Guts. Women's Blood and Guts, we don't yet know who's going to be in it. But they made it very clear weeks ago that there would be, for the first time, a women's Blood and Guts. Now we know there will be a men's Blood and Guts. We know who it will be between, and if you listen to the review last week, it should be pretty clear who's going to be in the men's Blood and Guts match. The women's tag team title tournament kicked off. We had a match here, and I have to say this was, for me anyway, a bracket buster. Not the team that I thought was going over here in this match, which I'm okay with. I mean, hey, they wanted to start the tournament out with an upset. I consider it to be an upset. And so we'll get into who advanced, what the brackets look like now, because there was a change. There was an injury, unfortunately, so there was a minor change here in this tournament. We'll talk about what that is. And then we also had the Don Callis Family Summit. Giant faction in the ring together, all to build the tension even further between Okada and Takeshita. They've done a very good job of slow burning this now for a while, to where we're at a point when these two men are in the ring together and Takeshita gets that look in his eyes and he's going after Okada, and Okada's got that big smile, that big smirk on his face. You can see it in the crowd. Like, they know that this is going to be a very big match, and they've been very careful not to give it away up to this point. It's coming very soon, but they've done a very good job of this. I thought last week what they did was very good, and then tonight we'll talk about the summit segment itself, what went down there, when I think that match is going to take place. So there was a lot to digest here on this show, but it was largely, I thought, a very good episode of Dynamite, especially compared to some of the other episodes that I've seen in recent months. I enjoyed the show. We'll talk about the entire thing. This is your AEW Fright Night Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, October 29th, 2025. I am the Solemn Monster. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. Some of the Halloween ones will be going away at the end of this week. So get in on that while you can. This is a new Randy Savage one, too. You have to figure out which one is in the description. But we got a new Macho Man one. And again, we'll hang out a little bit and go through all your questions and comments. about the show a little bit later on here in the stream. But let's start from the top here. I got a bit of a late start. I was watching Dynamite on a delay. I had to take care of some stuff. And then, of course, you had the baseball game on. Apparently, it's not much of a game tonight. If it's not over at this point, it's just about over. This series may be just about over. So anyway, let's get this going here. They open the show with Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin against Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia. This was a tornado tag team match. I will point out, we had a three-man booth tonight on commentary. Excalibur, Bryan Danielson, Taz. He's going to be out for a while. Shoulder replacement surgery. And I think having a two-man booth is perfectly fine with me. I think Excalibur and Danielson, they can hold down the fort fine. There's no need to have a three-man team until Taz gets back. Now, early in the match, Garcia tried shooting Cassidy into the barricade. Cassidy cleared it like a hurdle, and then he dared Garcia to come fight him, but he got blindsided out of nowhere by Wheeler Yuta, who then joined Garcia in double-teaming Cassidy in the crowd. As this was happening, Darby flew in from off-screen with a coffin drop. Yuta and Cassidy, they fought into the stands. Back at ringside, Darby ran the barricade with a shotgun dropkick to Garcia. And that took us into the commercial break. You think it's going to a game seven, huh? You know what? I will say, what I have seen of it so far, it has been a very strong World Series. I could definitely see it going to seven games. You may be right. I hope it does. It's been a fun series so far. Just not much of a competition tonight. So back from the break, Darby got sent crashing to the floor, and they were setting up tables at ringside. Cassidy dared both men to come back into the ring. He had the hands in the pockets, and he caught both men with drop kicks and DDTs. Garcia dodged a Stun Dog Millionaire into a guillotine, got gator rolled to the floor, placing Cassidy on the table, and Yuta flew off the top with a splash and crashed through the table. In the ring, Darby dared Garcia to hit him with a skateboard, but it was just a way to lure him in. Once his head was down, Darby hit a code red. Quickly up top for a coffin drop, but Yuta cut him off. And Cassidy went up, and he made the save. He was raking at the back. Until Darby powered up into a low blow. Cassidy jumped off the top with a DDT. Darby followed with a coffin drop, and Garcia narrowly broke the count. So there was an orange punch that got delivered to Garcia out on the apron. Yuta got caught with soul food before Cassidy hit a dive out onto Garcia through a table. Darby applied the Scorpion Deathlock on Wheeler Yuta, and Yuta had no choice but to submit. And Danielson said that giving up must have been something he learned from Jon Moxley, because he certainly didn't learn it from him. The tornado tag stipulation here, I thought it was better than doing a regular. It just seemed to work better for these four. And with Darby out there, it just made sense for this to be a tornado match, all the chaos and everything. I like how Darby is winning matches now. I mean, it's a small sample size, but I like how Darby is winning matches now with the Scorpion Deathlock. I hope this becomes a more normal thing. It's a little more realistic, I think, against certain opponents for him to be using that. And so I'm not saying ditch the coffin drop. I mean, that's still his signature move, but, you know, having a little bit of variety is fine. And I also think, you know, with the connection to Sting, he should have been using it anyway. You know, co-opting it is maybe like a co-finish. So I hope that continues. And so Darby submits another member of the Death Riders, clearly, and we would find out later in the show, but spoiler, it's going to be Darby and the Conglomeration against the Death Riders in Blood and Guts. I mean, you could pretty much tell that from last week's show. And I could see where this story, hopefully, with Moxley and the Death Riders is going, since if they're going to continue this, there's only one way for this to end. And Blood and Guts is the perfect place for them to do what it is that I hope they're going to do. All these submission losses for Moxley, and then even him later in the show against Kyle O'Reilly, you know, panicking in certain submissions. This needs to be building to something in the finish of that Blood and Guts match. They showed Hook arriving to the arena backstage earlier today, and you could see this was the first time on this show, not the only time, for the first time on the show, where you could see in the background there were people dressed in costumes, one of which being the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And they had other monsters and characters. But that was a callback to a few years ago when Hangman was in the Marshmallow Man costume. So this would come into play later in the show. Hook said that obviously he's the underdog tonight. Hook, for those who don't know, was announced a few days ago he was going to be in the number one contenders Fatal 4-Way. Samoa Joe, Bobby Lashley, Ricochet, Hook. From the moment they announced the match, you had to know why Hook was in this match, because that's a logical question to ask. Why is Hook in a number one contenders match for the World Heavyweight Championship? He's in the match to do the job. That's why. He's in the match for one reason and one reason only. So he said that, you know, he knows that he's the underdog here, a lot of decorated veterans in this match. He wouldn't want it any other way. He said that he'll be doing his best to make sure Samoa Joe doesn't win tonight. And he's decided to show, since Joe has decided to show the world who he really is, someone that Hook says he already knew. Cats are awesome. Cats are the best. No offense to all the dog lovers out there. Renee was backstage with Don Callis, talking about his family summit later tonight. Callis said that tonight he's going to show his family has never been stronger. And then he welcomed in the Young Bucks. And he said that it's criminal that this company has disrespected them so much. What this company has done to them, it's a crime. Tells them, think about having a family to have your back. And he told some random production person to go cue the very special entrance that he had arranged for Matt and Nick. So the Bucks walked out. Actually, they walked right by the same guys in those costumes. And they were staring at the Marshmallow Man. So off they went to the ring. Renee handed the microphone to Now, Callis was still backstage, but he had the mic. And Callis gave this just wildly over-the-top introduction for the two of them. He called them one of the greatest of all time. Brought up them being former friends with that rat bastard Kenny Omega. And then they had some pyro, and the Bucks seem overall very pleased with their entrance here. So that led into the Young Bucks, FTR, Jet Speed, and Jurassic Express. This was a number one contenders four-way match. The winners would go on to Full Gear to challenge Bandito and Brody King for the AEW Tag Team titles. Jack Perry gave his knife that he loves bringing everywhere with him. He gave his knife to Brian Danielson at ringside, and Danielson said that he needs it since Stokely Hathaway was sitting at the desk with them, which was kind of funny. So the Bucks and FTR, they shook hands. Kevin Knight, he went for a double clothesline attempt, tagged in Jack Perry, who laid out FTR with a double Hurricanrana. Perry tried to follow with a somersault dive out to the floor. FTR, though, caught him. And then they slammed him down face first on top of the announce desk. Matt Jackson held the ropes down. He wanted a dive from Cash Wheeler, who dropkicked Matt to the floor. And Nick got sent out as well. Mike Bailey, he wiped out the pile with a somersault out of the ring until Kevin Knight went up top. Dax Harwood cut him off, hit a superplex onto a massive pile of humanity. And during this, Knight looked like he jammed his leg up a little bit. He was shaking it out as they went to commercial. So Perry got worked over most of the commercial break, mounted a comeback, ended up tagging in Luchasaurus, who cleaned house. Stokely ordered the broke Bucks to get their shit together. Perry hit an assisted Hurricanrana on Mike Bailey off the apron onto Kevin Knight. And Perry launched off of Luchasaurus' back with a destroyer on Nick Jackson. They teased the countdown to extinction on Matt Jackson. Harwood, though, made the save. Knight charged in. He ate a huge headbutt from Luchasaurus. And Jack Perry wanted a doomsday device. Bailey, though, placed him on his shoulders on the apron. And Knight countered Luchasaurus into a DDT. Then he drop-kicked Perry off of his partner's shoulders. And Jack Perry basically did a backflip. Thankfully, he didn't land on his head, but he did a backflip out of the ring and onto the pile outside. So Jet Speed hit double dives. Luchasaurus kicked out of a frog splash. The Bucks came back to deliver a super kick party to the Dinosaur. Perry suffered one as well. FTR got clobbered with super kicks and a shatter machine of their own. So Knight was torched here by one last super kick, and he ate a BTE trigger, but he kicked out. And the Bucks were shocked. So the TK driver got cut off. Luchasaurus sent the Bucks to the floor. And the big man, he did a moonsault off the apron onto Matt. Mike Bailey followed with a moonsault of his own. Back inside, Kevin Knight connected with the UFO splash on Nick Jackson. But when he hit it, he bounced up. And he bounced up right into a shatter machine. Not the best shatter machine, but he bounced up into a shatter machine by FTR. And FTR gets the win, which means FTR is going to Full Gear. And they are now number one contenders for the men's tag team titles. This was a wild match, pretty much what you would expect from these four. It was just nonstop spot fest and big moves. I thought they would give it to the Bucks. I really did. I thought the Bucks were going to win here. And I guess they want FTR to get the belts back from Brodito at Full Gear in time to then have Adam Copeland come back. And Christian Cage disappeared too. I think in part because Nick Wayne is just still not medically cleared from the broken foot. Because we still haven't gotten that match, right? Now that would be ridiculous if we don't get a singles match at some point with him and Nick Jackson. Nick Wayne. So we just haven't seen Cope or Christian. I know Cope's off filming something. I don't know when he's due back. So this goes one of two ways, right? We're either going to get FTR winning the belts at Full Gear. And what I originally expected would be the case, Cope and Christian are eventually going to win those titles off of Dax and Cash. Because Copeland, the last time we saw him, we know who he's going after when he comes back, right? They attacked his wife. They spiked his wife. So when he comes back, he's going right after FTR. If the titles are involved, then the titles are likely going to end up changing hands and moving on to Cope and Christian. Or you could have Copeland return at Full Gear and cost FTR, and Brodito retain the titles, right? It's one or the other. I'm leaning towards thinking that the Brodito run is probably coming to an end, and they probably want to get those belts on FTR. But I was a little surprised that the Bucks didn't go over here. Now, the last time these two teams, FTR and Brodito, met in just a straight-up tag team match, it was the finals, if you remember, of that tag team eliminator tournament back in August. I think it was in the lead-up to Forbidden Door. And they went to a 30-minute draw. And it was a very good match. So I'm sure it'll be more of the same at Full Gear. So next up was the Callis Family Summit in the ring. I wasn't sure the ring would be able to fit all the different members of this faction. Don Callis came out. He had the Unified Champion, Kazuchika Okada, with him. Kyle Fletcher, the TNT Champion. Hechicero, who got Hechicero Chance from the crowd here in Texas. Rocky Romero, El Clone was out there, Lance Archer, Josh Alexander, and Mark Davis. And noticeably absent was Andrade, for obvious reasons. He's the black sheep of the family who isn't acknowledged anymore. And also, missing in action here, the IWGP champion, Konosuke Takeshita. Callis handed the microphone over to Rocky Romero, who said the first question is, who is the Don Callis family? They are the most dominant and largest faction, he said, in wrestling today. Well, he's 50% right. He said some of the members can't be here today due to injuries, and Takeshita had travel issues. Romero then unveiled the latest Callis painting. Right, I don't know how many we've had so far. It's at least two, maybe three over the years. Don Callis will reveal this new painting, and it's usually him all jacked and buff. Right, they had one with him and Jericho many years ago, and then him and Kenny. I'm pretty sure they had one with him and Kenny. So anyway, I think this would be number four, right? Because there was one with him and Fletcher, I think. But anyway, they did the big reveal here for the latest painting. He calls it La Familia. And it had a shirtless and jacked Don Callis, who had a Familia tattoo across his abdomen, like he got it in prison. And he was standing in front of the rest of his family, who were also shirtless and jacked in the painting. I have one of myself here on the wall, in fact. Nice and buff and jacked with a tattoo here across my abdomen. It's right over here. Kyle Fletcher, Then after Josh Alexander set up a quick video package about the Callis family, Kyle Fletcher read through an oath that he said the members all took. But before he can get too deep into it, he was interrupted by Takeshita's music. And so I guess he overcame his travel issues and the IWGP champion with his title over his shoulder. He walked out on stage. He did not look too pleased. Okada looked very nonplussed in the ring as everybody else was applauding. So they are in the ring now together, right? Takeshita comes down to the ring and Okada stands up. We got a face-off. Callis gets in between the two of them and he goes, I could tell there's still some tension brewing here. And he told Takeshita he needs to understand that while he is the alpha, this is an entire family of alphas. So there's going to be a little push and pull. At the end of the day, this is a family. And the final question is, how does the Don Callis family succeed? He says it's by listening to what he wants. And there is no I in team, but there is, however, he said there is one in the word family. Callis knows that he and Takeshita, they built this family on the ashes of Kenny Omega's career. While Takeshita was the first in, if Callis decides, he'll be the last one out. What he needs is for Takeshita to put the bad blood aside and shake Okada's hand. And the crowd loudly chanted no. Callis is screaming at Takeshita now, shake it, right? Shake his damn hand. This is not about ego. It's about honor as a member of the family. Do it for me. Do it for Don Callis. So Takeshita reluctantly puts his hand out because he's a team player, right? So he puts his hand out. And so now the question is, you know, what is Okada going to do? What do you think Okada was going to do? He put his hand out kind of for the fake out and kept going. And then his hand came up and he flipped Takeshita off right in front of his face. And of course, that wasn't a very magnanimous gesture on his part. Takeshita was not happy about this. He had to be restrained. He had to be held back by the other family members. And of course, the entire time, Okada had a huge smile on his face. He was loving this. So Callis said, shaking hands might not be the way to go. So here's what we're going to do. The two of you are going to team up. Again, you're going to be tag team partners this Saturday on Collision to show that you can work like a family. I thought this was an excellent segment. Another great tease here for the eventual Okada-Takeshita showdown. I think they've done one of the things that they've done a really good job on, and they don't always do a great job when it comes to some of this or some of the stories they do. It's like, whatever. It doesn't really do much for me. This is a match that I very much want to see. So that's a big part of why I've taken an interest in how they're building up to this. But I think even if this wasn't a match I really cared about, which it is, I think they've done a very good job of slow cooking the hate between the two of them, right? You could see the resentment from Okada, the jealousy from Okada. Takeshita, in many ways, is where Okada used to be, right? He's that younger talent that everybody raves about and goes out there and has these great classic wrestling matches and is winning championships. Now he's following in his footsteps. He's the IWGP champion. He won the G1 Climax. He's going to the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, right? That's what Okada used to be. And now it's Takeshita, right? It's this next generation here. They're part of the same group. Takeshita's getting all this love, and Okada doesn't want to share that. So it's easy to kind of see where his attitude is supposed to be in this story. And then Takeshita, of course, doesn't like this guy because he's a smug prick. And he sees what's going on here, and he's not very happy about it. And he doesn't want to be his friend. He doesn't want to be tag team partners with him. He wants to punch him in the mouth, right? Knee him in the face. So it's a very simple story, but I just like how, you know, the faction will come out, the one guy missing. Well, one of the guys missing always is Takeshita. And he's not out there celebrating. He's not out there clapping like a fucking seal. He doesn't like this guy. And Okada is just, he's smug as shit all the time. Big grin on his face, calling people a bitch. But yet, they still have not had that one-on-one match yet. And it's been teased for months now. So now here we are. We're heading into full gear, which is still a few weeks away. And yes, you have the Continental Classic coming up. that would make sense. I mean, as a final in the Continental Classic, makes all the sense in the world. I don't know that that's going to be the first match. I think the first match is going to be a Full Gear. Today's episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. At Mint Mobile, their favorite word is no. I don't know too many people who like to hear that word. I know I don't. I didn't like hearing it as a kid, and I don't like hearing it as an adult. But see, here's the difference. When Mint says no, that means no contracts, no monthly bills, no overages, no hidden fees. Basically, no BS. Which is why I said yes to making the switch and getting premium wireless for just $15 a month. I don't know about you guys, but I hate overpriced wireless. I cannot stand it. Unexpected overages and hidden fees, I mean, those make me even angrier. And a lot of providers get away with it because they can. With Mint Mobile, you don't have any of that. And plans start at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, all delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone and your own phone number with any Mint Mobile plan and bring along all of your existing contacts, too. Since using Mint, their service has been fast and reliable. No dropped calls or, I can barely hear you, are you 20,000 leagues under the sea? Like I've had with other carriers. And when I pay my bill now compared to what it used to be, I just shake my head at how much money I could have been saving each month. And for better service, too. I'm glad I gave Mint a shot. And you will be too, especially with this special offer for Sala Monster listeners. Ready to say yes to saying no? Make the switch at mintmobile.com/Sala Monster. That's mintmobile.com/Sala Monster. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. I think things are going to break down on Collision, and I don't know when the announcement comes, if it's next week, the week after. Things are going to boil over. I think they do an initial match. The only reason I would see that maybe it doesn't happen is the initial match, if they do one, let's say Full Gear, would be won by Okada. Takeshita is the IWGP champion. Is that going to cause an issue if they send him out there at the pay-per-view to lose? Because, I mean, AEW can do whatever they want, right? And losing to Okada, who is maybe the greatest IWGP champion that ever lived, I mean, that's hardly going to be a killer for Takeshita, but maybe politically, maybe that's something New Japan wouldn't want. I still feel like we get the first match at Full Gear, and Okada wins. And when they run it back, it ends up being the final of the Continental Classic, and then you can have Okada win, you know, the Unified title. Or rather, Takeshita win the Unified title off of Okada. But then the other wild card here is that a week after that is January 4th. And Takeshita's got to defend his title against somebody at the Tokyo Dome. He still has no opponent. So is it going to be a New Japan star, which I think it should be? Or would they want to put together a Takeshita-Okada rematch in the Dome? Because it would absolutely be worthy of that spot. I just don't know if that is the match that New Japan wants to do on that show. I don't give a shit. Give all three to me. I'm okay with that. Do it at Full Gear. Do it in the finals of the Continental Classic at World's End. And a week later, run it back at the Tokyo Dome. But again, I don't know that New Japan wants their big dome main event, you know, to be the third match, you know, in a matter of weeks between these two men. But to me, that'd be okay with me. You want to run it back multiple times, you get no argument out of me. But this was great. So after this, we got a video package. It's going to be Mercedes Moné taking on Olympia. It's going to be happening Saturday on Collision. It's a CMLL match. Renee was backstage live with the AEW Women's World Champion, Chris Statlander, who, of course, is defending her title against Mercedes at Full Gear. And she said Moné is upset and embarrassed after what happened last week, the whole segment with the cake and the puppet and all that nonsense. But she said, I'll be here to see Moné's match with Olympia on Collision this weekend. But also, I know Mercedes is here tonight. So if she has anything to say, she could say it to her face. I'll be the one with the one championship that you don't have. There's probably also a good time here just to mention we broke some news today that, in fact, Mercedes Moné is going to be wrestling at Super Clash, House of Glory, and the big event coming up on Saturday, November 15th. Have not yet announced exactly who she will be wrestling or what she'll be doing, but tickets are on sale for that right now. So she'll be there. We've got a lot of big names on this show. It's going to be a fun night. Now, last week, John Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly had a match. And at the end of that match, John Moxley was this close from losing to Kyle O'Reilly. And so what did he do? He punched the referee in the face. Or he elbowed him, whatever it was, right? Paul Turner. He knocked him out. And as disqualification finishes go, it was actually one of the better ones. Because the guy was so desperate, he doesn't want to tap out or submit for the second straight time, right? He just lost that way to Darby. So he punches the referee, right? And it got great heat and everything. And then the conglomeration ran out. So they ran it back this week. This was after Bryan Danielson made that absurd comment on commentary about how this was the biggest win of Kyle O'Reilly's career. And I said, if that is the biggest win of Kyle O'Reilly's career, then Kyle O'Reilly has had a very sad career. It was not the biggest win of Kyle O'Reilly's career, but it was a win. So they decided to run it back again here this week. This was the rematch. Moxley tried to give O'Reilly a free shot at the beginning here, and he suckered him in for a double leg. O'Reilly, though, had it scouted and almost got an early armbar. So it was all Moxley during the commercial break. Kyle tried a single leg. Moxley countered into a pile driver and crossface transitioned into a crucifix. O'Reilly got the rope break, and he got to his feet, and we got a strike battle between the two. Finally, Kyle got the ankle lock applied. Moxley stepped through. O'Reilly, though, stomped on his Achilles, and then he lowered the boom. Moxley, though, kicked out. So Moxley wanted a gotch pile driver. Kyle countered into a triangle. Moxley got the rope, so O'Reilly hit a PK. Wanted another one. Moxley, though, turned him inside out with a lariat into a double down. So Moxley willed himself back up first, and he levels O'Reilly with a big boot. Took too long to follow up. That gave Kyle a chance to pick the ankle into another ankle lock. Moxley is teasing that he might tap out, right? So it's the same situation as last week. He's teasing it, but he got to the ropes. He went outside, only for Kyle to meet him there with a slingshot dive and a dragon screw into the barricade. Somewhere in here, Moxley got busted open right around the eye. I didn't see how it happened. So O'Reilly wanted to leap off the apron. Marina Shafir, though, stood in his way. Moxley teased a death rider onto a chair. O'Reilly, though, spun out. He sank in a guillotine. Aubrey Edwards is in the ring, and she is loudly counting these men until she hits 10. So coming off the disqualification last week, we got a double countout finish here this week. And the fans didn't like that very much here in Texas. The fans wouldn't have liked that finish anywhere. And they booed, chanted bullshit. And then Marina Shafir just got into the ring and she just leveled Aubrey Edwards with a forearm shot. Knocked out Aubrey. So Claudio runs in. He puts the boots to Kyle. And Moxley joins in the attack. Until Roderick Strong made the save, he planted Claudio with an angle slam. Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia, they ran out. They beat down Roddy until Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy and Mark Briscoe. They ran in, and of course, the Death Riders at that point retreated into the crowd. So Darby took the mic, and he gets on the ropes, and he's staring at the Death Riders from afar. And he asks, you know, why are you running? And he says that he's going to give them a chance to suffer. So he passes the mic to Mark Briscoe. And Briscoe says he sees nothing but some fake-ass tough guys who sure like to skedaddle. So he's got a plan, and he's going to let Orange Cassidy tell us all what the plan is. And then in the most, just, you know, if you think of somebody who has a very dry sense of humor in their flat delivery, it's Orange Cassidy. So you can imagine how he made this announcement here. Standing there, and he just reluctantly goes, blood and guts. Far cry from William Regal when he announces War Games. He says, blood and guts. And the challenge has been set. I did find it amusing that after he made the challenge, right, he laid down the gauntlet here. Of all the members of the Death Riders, Marina Shafir was the one who had to be held back. She was the one who was triggered the most by this announcement here. So, look, I mean, the match itself with Kyle and Moxley, it was a good match. And last week, as far as like a wrestling match. Yeah, there's a lot of mat wrestling involved here, you know, with Kyle. He incorporates that, obviously, into the matches with the submission holds. And they're telling a story with Moxley where he panics every time he gets trapped in one of these submission holds, right? Like here, it's the ankle lock, just like last week. And then he got him in the guillotine. So there's a clear story they're telling here, and it's going to lead into Blood and Guts. And it's going to hopefully lead to the end, ultimately. Maybe it won't happen that night, but the end of the Death Riders. The end of at least Jon Moxley, his association with the Death Riders. And really, once Moxley is out of the picture, the Death Riders, they cease to exist. There really is no reason at this point for them to exist. There's no reason to replace Moxley with somebody else. I don't see this as the same thing as like the Judgment Day, where WWE has found a way to use the Judgment Day as a way to spotlight different people over the last few years. They kind of rotate in, they rotate out. They started with Copeland, they kicked him out, then Balor came in, right? It was Balor and Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. There's been a lot of turnover, and yet the Judgment Day still lives on. And the Judgment Day also is one of these groups where it's like, okay, we're kind of past the peak of what this group used to be, but they get so much television time and they try to make it interesting with, you know, the stuff with Balor and Dom and what's going to happen when Liv Morgan comes back, and they're trying to, you know, kind of flesh out those character stories. And they don't do a lot of that here with the Death Riders. They play that stupid music. They come out from the parking lot. You got Wheeler Yuta. You got Daniel Garcia. Pac, when he shows up, he never speaks. It's like, okay, whatever. Once Moxley is out of the picture, there's no need for the Death Riders to be a thing anymore. You know, and they've gotten as much out of them as I think they're going to get. So hopefully Blood and Guts is where Moxley submits again, and it proves to be one time too many. Because at that point, there's no reason for these people to follow him around like a bunch of little puppy dogs. If Darby is going to put the stake through the heart, Blood and Guts should be the place where it happens. Hopefully it happens there, because if not, and they just keep this rolling on, fuck is the point of any of this? You know, they seem to be telling a story with Moxley in these submission holds. It has to be leading to something in that match. Now, we come back from a commercial break, and there's a brawl going on in the back with Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander. They're not waiting for full gear. They're going at it backstage, right in front of the Marshmallow Man. He's getting more TV time than most people on this fucking roster get. They're going to have to add a roster entry for him on their roster page. Put his fucking head, little graphic there for him. So anyway, they fight out into the arena. Chris Statlander fights back, got Mercedes in a fireman's carry, threw her into the ring. And so with Moné in the ring backtracking, Statlander got attacked from behind outside by Athena, who is teaming with Mercedes in this women's tag team title tournament. And Athena tosses Statlander in the ring. We see a backstabber into the O-face by Athena. Moné locks in the statement maker. Willow Nightingale's music hits. She sprints out to the ring with Harley Cameron, because the two of them are facing Mercedes and Athena in the tournament next week on Dynamite. And Mercedes and Athena, they backtrack to the stage. We'll get back to the women here in a second, but we had a video package after this. Bandido. I saw this video earlier today. I don't know if they showed the whole thing here. They showed enough of it, if not the whole thing. It was basically at the show last week. Bandido was in the main event against Okada, right? Great match. And this was the first time that his grandmother, who traveled a great distance to be there, I guess, from Mexico, this was her first time seeing Bandido wrestle live. Or maybe wrestle at all. So I saw this on YouTube earlier in the day. It was very well done. They showed that here. And they mentioned that he's going to be defending his Ring of Honor world title against Máscara Dorada this weekend. So we go back to the announcers at ringside. And we see Excalibur. Now, Excalibur has a mask on his face every week. And Bryan Danielson is sitting there, and he has a mask on his face. And I guess he was dressed up as Hechicero for Halloween. But they were talking about something serious. So it was a little ridiculous because they're delivering serious injury news. And I'm looking at Bryan Danielson, you know, sitting there in this lucha mask. But they informed us that last week, Penelope Ford suffered an arm injury. And she may not be medically cleared to compete in the women's tag team title tournament, as well as Blood and Guts, because, you know, her and Megan Bain would have been part of the women's Blood and Guts match coming up. But this all led into women's tag team tournament action. We had Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminata taking on the Sisters of Sin, Julia Hart and Sky Blue. There was a spot early in the match. Hayter and Aminata, they hit a double suplex on Hart and Blue, and Julia landed on her fucking head. I don't know what happened as she went over. She just went over the wrong way and looked like she spiked herself right on her head on the suplex. We got a blind tag by Julia Hart, who popped Jamie Hayter with a cheap shot, and that allowed a double flapjack to connect, and Hayter got worked over into the commercial break. Hayter was able to counter a double suplex into one of her own. Aminata made the hot tag and ran wild with kicks. Jamie tagged right back into the match. Missile drop kick. Julia made the save. All four women were slugging it out until Hart and Blue, they got dropped with stereo German suplexes. Hart and Blue, they answer with double super kicks. Hayter and Aminata respond with double lariats. We got a quadruple down. All four women are down. Hayter and Hart, they spill outside. And we missed a shot of Tekla, who I guess came out from under the ring, but she blindsided Hayter with a spear. Excalibur thought it was Julia Hart. It took him a little bit to realize, oh, wait, it was Tekla. So in the ring, Aminata got planted with an assisted spinning slam of some kind here with Sky Blue pinning Queen Aminata to win it for the Sisters of Sin. And then they stood with Tekla, because together, collectively, they are the Triangle of Madness, these names, man. Actually, you know what? All these teams have names. I don't have them all written in front of me. Sisters of Sin is probably the least offensive of all the names. Some of the names are just ridiculous. But they are, collectively, they are the Triangle of Madness. And so they posed on the stage. And my bracket is busted, because I thought for sure that Jamie Hayter and Aminata were going to make it, not just at least out of the first round, but I thought they were making it to the finals. You know, I didn't have them winning the entire thing, but I thought they would at least make it that far. And they get bounced out of the first round here. So now Julia Hart and Sky Blue will meet the winners of Mercedes and Athena against Willow and Harley, which is taking place on the show next week. And actually, here's the current tournament graphic. There you see the Sisters of Sin, and they will meet the winners of the match you see there next week. And then on the other side of the bracket, you've got Alex Windsor and Riho against Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. And then you got Penelope Ford and Megan Bain, who are not going to be in the tournament. Megan Bain will be. I'll get to what happened there in a moment. And they're going to be taking on Anna Jay and Ty Mello. But looking at the left side of the bracket here, you know, it seemed to me that we were heading for possibly Toni and Mina against Mercedes and Athena in the finals. And I said last week, it's very predictable. I could envision, I think I even said this on TNT last night, that I could envision Hayter and Aminata eking by to the finals and then falling to Toni and Mina. But now I look at this bracket here, and I would not be at all shocked if Mercedes and Athena get bounced out of the first round. Because they certainly should not be winning the titles. That would be ridiculous. But I don't know that they make it out of the first round. And I like that. I like the fact that I don't know what's going to happen. I like the fact that it's not as predictable as I thought it was probably shaping up to be. You know, to me, that's a good thing. But, yeah, the other thing also about this tournament here, there was a backstage segment that took place right after this, where Tony Schiavone is in the back. And Tony Schiavone is donning the Phantom of the Opera half mask, which he wore at Halloween Havoc in 1990. So here we are in 2025, and Tony Schiavone is wearing the Phantom of the Opera costume again, and he's backstage to interview Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. And Penelope Ford has her arm in a sling, which is never a good sign. She said that she tore her UCL, and she is out indefinitely. She is not medically cleared. She said those titles were their destiny. She is going to make every woman feel the same pain that she is feeling right now, because that is what they deserve. So Bain, because she was asking Megan Bain, what are you going to do now? And Megan Bain said that any woman willing to make history, step up. So Marina Shafir walks in. And she said, don't worry, I'm listening. So then Jon Moxley saunters into the shot behind them. He's right in between them. He's looking at Megan Bain. He's looking at Marina Shafir. And he said, these two? Look out. And then he walked away. And Marina put her fist up for a fist bump. Megan, fisted her back. And so now it's official. We have a brand new tag team here in this tournament. Megan Bain and Marina Shafir. So does that change things? I wouldn't say radically. But again, if I bring up the bracket here, Megan Bain and Marina Shafir are going to the semifinals. And they will meet Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa. And I still have Tony and Mina winning the entire thing. Even though things were a little less predictable now, I still think in the end, Tony and Mina are going to win the tag team titles. And honestly, I think that is the right move to make. And you could look at this and go, well, what about all these other women? You know, the world championship is occupied by a select few, and Mercedes has had a lock on the TBS title now for, whatever it is now, 500 and something days, right? She set the new record. These women need something to fight for. Yes, that is true. And they will. They will fight for it. But I think it's important right out of the gate that you have the championships on someone or, you know, some people who have a more established name on the show to give those titles credibility, to make those titles mean something. And the matches and the title defenses that will come out of it from Tony and Mina, you want those matches to mean something. It's going to mean more if those titles are on somebody like a Tony Storm at first than just putting it on, you know, like Megan Bain, or putting it on Penelope Ford, or putting it on Sky Blue. Yeah, you know, you want to build to that. And I just look at the missteps that WWE has made with the women's U.S. title, because they just introduced two new women's titles themselves going back to December, right? December and January. They introduced the IC and the U.S. titles. And you just see the difference between the two. You see what Becky Lynch has done with that championship and the way they booked her on Monday nights. And then you see the state of the women's U.S. title on Friday nights, and it's like night and day. It's unbelievable that the same people are creatively responsible for both of those championships. And I think it would be a misstep to put the titles on somebody who just isn't established and expect that they are going to elevate the titles. They alone are not going to elevate the titles. They should be working with someone like Tony Storm and then eventually beating someone like Tony Storm. And that is how you establish a dominant team. That is how you establish these new championships as having real value and real meaning. So that's my lot. That, and also creatively, storyline-wise, Tony and Mina have lost everything. They both lost their respective titles. They have nothing. This is how they get back in the hunt. Because if they just go in here and they lose, okay, well, now they lost again. Like, where do they go from here? Story-wise, I think it makes sense for them to win. So I'm sticking with that as my pick. Main event was a four-way match. Yes, another one. We had a few of those on this show. Samoa Joe, Bobby Lashley. We had Ricochet, and we had Hook. The winner of this match will go on to Full Gear to challenge Hangman Adam Page, the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Gee, I wonder who will win. Let us find out. Hook, he tried to make the most out of the opportunity very early on by going after Samoa Joe. who was not having any of that shit. Lashley pulled Joe to the floor, drove him into the steps. Ricochet flew in with a drop kick to the floor. But as he came back to the ring to face off with Hook, he didn't realize that Lashley was standing behind him. So Ricochet got sent flying, and we had some throws here by Lashley, and Hook tried a Northern Light suplex, so Lashley broke up the pin. And then, showing absolutely no fear, Hook went right at Bobby Lashley. Lashley, just like a child, he just picked him up, he dumped him on the apron, and he yelled at him, just calm down, right? All that youthful energy, calm the fuck down, is basically what he's telling this kid. Hook refused. As the younger generation tends to do, they don't listen. So sometimes you have to put them in their place, which is what Lashley did here with Hook. Launched him to the floor, and then he chokeslammed him, whatever it was, basically chokeslammed him onto the ring apron. Ricochet flew in with a dive, but he got caught. So then Joe followed with a dive of his own. He mowed down Lashley and Ricochet with that diving forearm through the ropes. We've seen him do that a million times. And that took us to commercial. They came back from the break. Hook fought back on Joe, who hit the snap power slam. Hook just narrowly got his head tucked on the landing. Ricochet returned. He tried to dive off the middle rope, but Joe did his usual, his casual walk off. And then lit Ricochet up with jabs. Just when Joe was going for the home run shot, Lashley pounced Ricochet from the ring. What a fucking pounce this was. And we got a slugfest between Joe and Lashley. Big spine buster by Bobby, who caught Ricochet leaping in with a dominator. He didn't put him down gently. Let's just put it that way. Hook, though, broke up the pin. So Hook tried an up and over. Lashley caught him, but he got sent into Joe with a clothesline. Hook sent Lashley to the floor, and again, it's down to Joe and Hook. Two former members here, or at least I guess Hook is a former member of the Ops. And he floored Joe with a T-bone suplex. He got him up with ease. Hook very briefly posed, and that little delay allowed Ricochet to deck him. Ricochet just barely clipped Lashley with a dive out to the floor. Very quickly got back in the ring. He flew out of the ring on the opposite side with a Sasuke special on Joe. Got back up on the apron, went up top, hit his shooting star press, and Hook kicked out. So Ricochet loaded up for the spirit gun. Hook, though, countered into Red Rum. Ricochet fought to his feet, but he collapsed. Until Joe ran in with a senton on both men, and then Joe quickly placed Hook in the corner. He wanted a muscle buster. Lashley flew in with a spear on Samoa Joe. Right as he delivered the move, Lashley went for the cover. Ricochet flew in off the from off camera with a 450 splash. Everybody was down. Ricochet wanted vertigo on Hook, who got a roll up only for a two count. Sent Ricochet to the outside and then low bridged Lashley. Ricochet then cracked Lashley in the back with a chair. Just like I said last week, how is this going to go? Lashley and Ricochet, they're going to fight off. They're going to effectively cancel each other out. And what's going to happen? It's going to come down to Samoa Joe and Hook and all the history they have together. And there's one reason why Hook is in this match. So it played out exactly like I said it would, because it should have been obvious to anybody, right? I mean, the Hurt Syndicate and the Demand, for whatever reason, are still feuding. So, of course, those two are going to fight off. And so we got the final standoff here between these two guys. Joe sank in the coquina clutch, and Lashley was about to turn back and make the save when Hook tapped out. So Samoa Joe, to no one's surprise, becomes number one contender yet again for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. After the match was over, here comes Powerhouse Hobbs, here comes Katsuyori Shibata. They come to the ring to celebrate with Joe. Tony Schiavone, the Phantom of the Opera, Phantom Schiavone, he joins them in the ring. And Schiavone congratulates Joe, says it's time to sign the contract for full gear. We're not even waiting until next week for a contract signing. We're having one right now. And he announces the Fright Night Dynamite crew to come on down to the ring to assist. And so out comes the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And we have a cow. We have a chicken. We had a bull. Actually, honestly, it looked like Mantar. The head was not as big, but basically we got fucking Mantar here on this show. Here comes Mantar. There was a couple of other characters out there as well. So Joe takes the contract and he said, I want to make sure that this is the safest place possible to sign this, because he doesn't trust these people in these costumes. So he says this, and then immediately Hobbs and Shibata, they clear the ring. They beat up the cow, they beat up the chicken, they beat up Mantar. And the last person remaining with them in the ring is the Marshmallow Man. So they grab the Marshmallow Man and hold him, and Joe rips the head off, or the mask, whatever. And it was not Hangman Adam Page, as Joe thought it would be. It was just some rando. So Joe punched him in the face, and then he signed the contract. And Joe took the microphone and said, Hangman is not as creative as he used to be. And he apologizes for the carnage, but standing in front of you is your next AEW World Champion. So we hear Tony Schiavone's voice. We don't see him because he's not in the ring anymore. He had gotten out of the ring, but we hear his voice, and he says, well, it's official for full gear. And he said, now a toast is in order. So Hobbs brought a bucket of beers into the ring. Joe was waiting for the toast to be over. And Schiavone, who had climbed back into the ring and had a beer of his own in his hand, said that Hangman is the living embodiment of cowboy shit. And at that point, we didn't hear Tony Schiavone's voice. We heard a different voice. We heard the voice of the Hangman. And the camera pan. And what was so great about this is that when Schiavone was saying these things, because it was Schiavone in the ring before. It wasn't like it wasn't him at all the entire segment. Obviously, during that portion where they brought the characters out to the ring, Schiavone had stepped out of the ring. So when you started hearing his voice again, you really didn't think anything of it, right? And so, now this is me going back and rewinding it, because I didn't see this the first time. But when he got back into the ring with the beers, and he's saying these parting words, and he mentions, you know, Hangman Page, cowboy shit, and he's plugging the pay-per-view, you know, November 22nd. You look at Schiavone, and it's not Schiavone. It's Hangman Page, dressed up as Tony Schiavone. But, like, he's mouthing the words and holding the beer up, and he's mouthing the words and trying to keep up with what Schiavone's voice is saying. And I'm sure there were some people in the front row when he got in the ring who probably could tell, like, oh, wait a minute, you know, it's not Tony. But most people had no idea. It's not like people were, like, blowing the big secret and reacting to it. If you weren't really paying close attention, you never would have noticed, because he was wearing the same thing. He's mouthing the words. But then the voice switches, you hear Hangman's voice, and he punts Shibata and Hobbs low, and then he smashes the beer bottle over Joe's head, and he pulls off the wig, and we see that it's Hangman, and then everybody pops. And Hangman's on the apron, and he vaults into the ring for the buckshot lariat, and he had to be held back by security. Joe was groggy from the attack. So then they carry the champion off. He's a madman. And that is how the show went on the air, or off the air, rather. First of all, let me just say this. Great main event. The only critique I have of it, the finish was very predictable. From the moment the match was announced, you knew who was going to win. So if you were looking for unpredictability, oh my God, who's going to go to full gear? Who's going to be the number one contender? We have like two good choices. No, we didn't. No, we didn't. At no point was there any drama over who was actually going to win this match. But the match itself, it had, you know, some great action. They had some good near falls. And they had a hot crowd for it as well. I don't remember what part of Texas they were in. The crowd was pretty hot for the show all night. So the only critique would be I would have been nice to have a little more unpredictability in the field that they put together here in this match. But Joe was the clear choice. But I loved how they pulled off that little twist at the end. Like, I had to go back and watch it a second time. And then I noticed, like, okay, that's obviously not Shivani. But at the moment that the voice change happened, like, the camera, they had, like, a hard cam shot, but, like, it panned up. Probably very similar to what happened when he dressed up years ago as the Marshmallow Man. But it was a very clever way of pulling off something like that. That wasn't so obvious, right? Again, maybe it was if you were there when Shivani left, and I don't know what moment they kind of swapped. But I thought that was actually very well done. But look, Hangman promised he was going to make Joe's life a living hell, right? After what happened at Wrestle Dream, and he wasn't on Dynamite last week. He was on Collision. And so this was his way of sticking it to Samoa Joe. So I loved it. I thought that closing angle was very well done. And on the whole, I enjoyed the show a lot tonight. I did. I wish they were all this focused and also had the kind of matches that we had on this show. Fun angle there at the end. I thought it was a strong show. And so now we head into the month of November. Before we even get to Full Gear, we have Blood and Guts. We know what the men's match is going to be. We know who some of the women are going to be, but we still don't have a great sense of what these teams are actually going to look like. So we still have to wait and see how that shakes out. And then 10 days after that, that's coming up on the 12th. 10 days after that is the pay-per-view. And so that's what we're heading into now. So today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, World Mental Health Day recently passed on October 10th, but just because that day may have come and gone doesn't mean we can't take a moment to say thank you to all the therapists out there. BetterHelp therapists have helped over 5 million people worldwide on their mental health journeys, whether it be coping with a loss in their life or finding out how to become a better version of themselves. BetterHelp is honoring those connections and the therapists who make them possible, and is showing just how easy it is to get guidance from a licensed therapist online. I've used BetterHelp myself in the past for something that I would consider minor, but you'd be surprised how quickly something minor could turn into something major if left untreated. For me, it was incredibly helpful just to have someone to talk to, and for that, I will say thank you as well. And if it helped me, I know it can help you too. Finding the right therapist can be life-changing, and BetterHelp makes that process simple. They do the initial matching work for you so that you can focus on your therapy goals. You fill out a short questionnaire that helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate mean they usually get it right the first time. But if for any reason you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. And all BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. As the world's largest online therapy platform with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp has an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on more than 1.7 million client reviews. The numbers don't lie. This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who have helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey. Solomonster listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. I did not get a Twitter poll up, although it's Dynamite and it's Twitter. So I don't really think you need a poll to know what that would have looked like. But that having been said, let's get into your super chats here. So I know we got a bunch of questions to go through. Let's be honest. Do you really need a poll? You can imagine what the poll was going to say without me even putting it up. BlissFan says, it's crazy that Blood and Guts is happening in the same month as War Games. You know, that's actually a great point. I hadn't thought about that. Usually it's a few months earlier. That is true. We are getting two War Games matches on November 12th, and then 2 weeks later, 2.5 weeks, we are getting two more War Games matches. That's a lot. That's too much. Dry Chicken. That WrestleMania 42 poster reveal was very underwhelming. Pro wrestling or sports entertainment under Triple H doesn't feel cool anymore. It's dry. Well, you have nobody to blame for that but yourself. Because, you see, when I started seeing these mystery vignettes, I did not allow my expectations to overwhelm the reality of what I expected it to be, which was going to be something. I didn't know it was WrestleMania related. I thought maybe it was 2K26 related. I wasn't expecting, I mean, everybody was just going wild with these fantasy guesses of, oh, it's, you know, it's Andrade is back, or Brock Lesnar is joining the Vision, or it's Chris Jericho. That was my favorite one. It's Chris Jericho. Like, you're fucking kidding me. You have no one to blame but yourselves for that. Also, two more days, or one more day left until Halloween. I can't wait. I have an idea for the stream on Friday. We'll see if I do it. Solo's favorite sicko. I was born just 14 days after Royal Rumble 1992. Oh, man. I feel sorry for you. You missed it. You could have been a part of greatness. Now, granted, you wouldn't have known what was going on. You were basically still a fetus at that point, but you were born into a world where the Rumble had already taken place. You didn't get to enjoy it like I did. I feel for you. Although, I don't know. You know, Solo's favorite sicko, he may not have enjoyed the Royal Rumble in 92. There weren't a lot of destroyers. There weren't a lot of BTE triggers. I don't know if you would have enjoyed that match. Dry Chicken says, I have 4 horror movies to recommend on your watch list. And the list gets longer. I still have to watch The Substance. The Howling, both 1 and 2. Okay, The Howling I saw. I saw The Howling. Cat People, 1982. And Children of the Corn, 1984. Yeah, you know, I don't know how I never saw Children of the Corn. Solo's favorite sicko. I would recommend the horror slash western movie Bone Tom. Oh, no. Oh, no. The movie Bone Tomahawk, if you have not seen it. I love it, even though some folks are split. Yeah, isn't there someone who is literally split in that movie? I've heard about Bone Tomahawk. I don't really have too much of an interest in seeing it. Bone Tomahawk, from what I've heard, Bone Tomahawk would be on a list of probably movies that I have seen that I regret seeing. There is a small list of movies that I have seen that I deeply regret watching. I feel like that would end up on that list. Bender McSimpson, Good Night of Wrestling. Really like the 4-way tag, women's tag, and main event. I love the Hangman Shivani bit at the end. The Hangman Shivani bit at the end was the best part of the show. Like, they got me. They got me on that one. Joseph, Happy Halloween, Solo. Halloween Ends rocks. Sure. Which one was it again where you have all the people in the streets? What were they chanting? What was that stupid phrase? Evil dies. Evil dies tonight. Evil dies tonight. I'm like, all you people are going to be fucking dead in 5 minutes, and I'm going to enjoy every second of it. Evil dies tonight. I'm like, just kill them. Kill them now. Please. Evil dies tonight. My God. Duff's Vids, what did the boy say when he seen the cemetery covered in snow? I see dead people. Yes. My dentist took out the wrong tooth. He said it was accidental. Duff's Vids, did you hear about the demon that got arrested? They got him for possession. On a roll here. Oz and Glorious, take 2 seconds and hit that fucking like button, folks. Yeah, we're at 353, so climbing, but still not good enough yet. Then, of course, we got Temujin Zephyr with the 99 bomb. Thank you, Temujin. Always love those red bombs. Nathan says, what's the worst Halloween movie in your opinion? The one with Busta Rhymes. MacTub, thoughts on The Rock's final boss run? I think it didn't receive as much praise as the blame he got for ruining WrestleMania 41, despite Triple H's ineptitude. Well, what was shaping up to be, I think, a pretty lame WrestleMania main event, because he was forced to embrace his heel side again, and we got Final Boss Rock, it was one of the best runs of his entire career. I thought overall the run was great. The music was great. Being able to see that character on TV was great. So it all worked out in the end. Oz and Glorious doesn't get better than a banger Dynamite episode followed by a stoked as fuck Solomonster. Now let's hit like and get some Be the Booker going. Yeah, that's good advice. Let's do that. We're at 362. Jairo Sanchez, thoughts on Randy not being in the WrestleMania promo video? He's a Triple H prodigy. You would think that Triple H would push him harder. I think that tells you that Randy Orton is probably not factored into any of the major match plans for WrestleMania next year. You could tell a lot by the people they actually featured in that video. MacTub, peak Gus or Lalo? I think Lalo revived Better Call Saul post Chuck. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Look, there are some people, and I would not argue with it. I still got to probably go with Better Call Saul. I'm sorry, not Better Call Saul, but with Breaking Bad. There are some people that would say Better Call Saul topped Breaking Bad. That it was even better than Breaking Bad, right? And how often does that happen where you have a spinoff that's better than the original, especially when the original is one of the best TV shows ever made? It just speaks to the quality of the writing and Vince Gilligan, specifically his writing in the show. Lalo is a great character, man. Lalo is a great character. I hate to go against Gus, but I think you maybe... Yeah. I don't know, man. I may go Lalo. Arabian Knight, you've seen 2015's Goosebumps movie with Jack Black. No, but when I was younger, I used to read the Goosebumps books by R.L. Stine. The Goosebumps books were a big deal back then, especially when you would feel the cover and they had the raised bumps on the cover of the books. Yeah, I used to have a collection of the Goosebumps books. I had a collection of the Chronicles of Narnia books. I mean, back then at that age, the religious overtones of those books were just completely lost on me. I just enjoyed the stories. You know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, and so on. I had my favorites. Temujin says, have you seen Aliens yet, Solo? I have not. I've not seen Alien. Are you asking me? Have I seen Aliens or have I seen Aliens? The answer to both is no. Not yet. MacTub, is Seth an all-time great to you? Why or why not? I mean, he's great. I don't look at Seth as an all-time great. I just don't. He's not in that rarefied air like the top guys are. He just doesn't have that same level of appeal. In-ring is tremendous. But compared to like the all-time greats, he's not in the conversation to me. Oz and Glorious, Bone Tomahawk is fucking incredible. That's great. That's great. That's not necessarily going to get me to watch it, but I believe you. I'm sure it's very well done. And she had a voice that could break real glass. Yes, real glass. Whitney could break real glass. Justin G, it's like people don't know 400 likes equals be the booker. Well, such is the case with Wednesday nights most of the time. And Oz and Glorious, Better Call Saul clears Breaking Bad. Chuck, Lalo, Nacho, and Kimberly. I said I would, if you were to argue with me that you felt it was better than Breaking Bad, that it topped Breaking Bad, I would not argue with you. I would not argue with you. Both shows were incredible. Among the best shows I've ever seen. Breaking Bad is in the top mix of shows that I've ever seen. Tell you, man, I've made the recommendation over the years to people on the show, because I would mention it from time to time about The Shield. And I've gotten emails periodically from people over the years who were like, thank you for turning me on to The Shield. I didn't know about it. I never saw it. It's amazing. I'm binging. And I did a rewatch of all 7 seasons probably a couple of years ago. And I feel like every few years I'm going to do that. Because it's just such a great show. Very tense. And I like the way it was shot. See, I feel like these days, if you were to watch the show in terms of the way it's shot, it probably isn't going to look all that different than some other television shows you've seen in the last like 10, 20 years. But at the time, it was like groundbreaking. You just didn't see shows like that. And it was on, you know, it was on basic cable. I mean, FX was, I guess, you know, basic cable. And some of the scenes and the language and stuff they got away with, it was a very edgy show. What drew me into it was Michael Chiklis as the lead, because I'm a fan of his. I've watched a lot of stuff that he's in, going back to his days when he was on, you know, the lead on The Commish on ABC. Daddy-O on NBC, we'll forget that happened. But, you know, The Shield is just an all-time favorite of mine. And he actually did it was more than a pilot. He did a few episodes for a potential new show called, I don't think it was called Mule. It was something about, like, human trafficking over the border. He was like a border patrol agent. And they made, maybe it was 6 episodes. And they were hoping it was going to get picked up for a full season by Paramount Plus, and then it just never got picked up. It was around the time of the pandemic. I don't know if that had something to do with it. He played this character, Ben, and I enjoyed it. And again, if they would have picked up the show, I would have watched it. You know, Chiklis was on an episode. They had this anthology series on Fox called Accused a few years ago, and he was in at least one of the episodes. So I made sure I watched that episode, and of course he was in the Fantastic Four, and like, I'm, you know, there's certain actors like that you're just like a fan of their work. For me, he's one of those guys. MacTub says, number one, all-time Sopranos. Number two, Game of Thrones, until season 4. What happened in season 4? No spoilers, but what happened in season 4? Is there a drop-off in quality in season 4? And number three, Breaking Bad. Number four, in my opinion, Better Call Saul. Yeah, Sopranos, I'd go Sopranos number one. You know, it's between Breaking Bad and The Shield for me. And I go back and forth sometimes. I might go Shield 2, Breaking Bad 3. But to me, that's probably my top three. Better Call Saul, I don't know if it's number 4, but it's up there. It's probably top 5. I really enjoyed the first season. I enjoyed both seasons so far. But I'm a big fan of season 1 of The Last of Us. I think The Last of Us is just fantastic. So to me, again, I don't know where it falls. Show's not over yet. But that's another one that I hold in a very high regard. Never played the game, by the way. Never played any of the games, but especially season 1. I really enjoyed that. They ran out of source material after season 4. Is that what happened? You've never seen The Wire? No, I've seen The Wire. Oh, The Wire. Yeah, The Wire. The Wire is also an excellent show. A little, it's the nature of the show. A little too much sitting around in cars and doing nothing. a little too much of that. But The Wire is also a very good show. The Wire is a great show. Game of Thrones, though, man, I never saw Game of Thrones. I just never did. I should probably change that. I heard that superhero show, The Boys, was also very good. So many good shows I got to catch up with. And yet I'm stuck watching SmackDown every week. I need to watch some good shows and then come on here live and review them. Might do better numbers than SmackDown. Oz and Glorious, you know who hit the like 400 times? It was Joey Peeps. You can't trust that son of a bitch. That no good son of a bitch, Joey Peeps. Retro KOH Solo, have you ever heard any of the horror stories about caving or cave diving? I cherish every day I'm not dumb enough to go underground. Dude, there will be videos, all right, that will come across my feed on either IG or I'm not on TikTok really much at all, but you know, sometimes these TikTok videos end up on Instagram or they end up on X. But I will come across these clips, and I don't know where this is, what country they're in. These people, it's not cave divers per se, but they will, like, there's a hole, right, in the ground, and it's very narrow, and it goes underground a little bit, and it's got water. So they'll go in the hole, under the water, and I guess they go under the rock. And they come out, I don't know how many feet down, but they come out another hole in the ground and up above out of the water. But it's a very narrow tunnel. And I watch this and I just get claustrophobic just watching it. Like my palms start to sweat. I cannot imagine what would possess someone to do something like that. Because when you go down, like some of these things, like you really got to maneuver your body in there. And it's like if you just get stuck. And you're underwater now. Even without the water, I think I would panic. But like I watch this and I go, what would possess someone to do this? Why? Why would you do this? I did see The Descent, by the way. Someone asked, have I seen The Descent? It's a good cave movie. I did see The Descent. I will not be descending anywhere except into my bed when I go to sleep tonight. I will not be descending anywhere else unless, you know, with a hot woman or something, then I'll descend. But anyway, Retro KOH, thank you for the question. Dr. Scorpio, one win away. I'm so hyped and nervous about it, but it does feel like a seven. Oh, so talk about the World Series. But we took two on the road, which is huge. That is huge. Did you see the tweet from Magic Johnson today? Is he being for real or is that just something like he just posts like funny tweets, because he posted something about the World Series and I wish I had it in front of me. It was like, game five is an important game. And whoever wins game five will gain control of the series. I'm like, holy shit. I had no idea. I said, I have a theory. I think the team that scores the most runs is probably going to win the game. Can I get 100,000 retweets for that? Like he does. What riveting insight there from Matt. He should start a wrestling podcast. Riveting insight there from Magic Johnson. I hope that's like a regular thing that he does and he wasn't being serious. Dr. Scorpio, thank you again. Oz and Glorious, do you remember the show New York Undercover? Sounds familiar. I'm in the middle of watching NYPD Blue for the first time. I'm going through certain TV shows that I grew up with. Like it was on when I was younger, but I never saw them. And two of them, one is NYPD Blue. The other is The X-Files. I have not started The X-Files yet. I'm very excited to start The X-Files. I feel like it would be right up my alley. But I'm starting with NYPD Blue. I'm still in the first season, but I'm enjoying it. That Sipowicz, man. It's a good character. Justin G. Buy, rent, or sell? Novolox cream cheese egg. Sell, sell, sell. MacTub, do you think Triple H will manage to fuck up Orton versus Cody? Yes. Yes, I do. Arabian Knight, have you seen Victor Frankenstein with Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy? Also going to watch the new Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein film with Oscar Isaac. I did not see Victor Frankenstein. I don't think I've ever seen anything that had Daniel Radcliffe in it, including any of the Harry Potter movies. I never read any of the Harry Potter books. I never saw any of the Harry Potter movies. I don't think I've ever seen anything that has Daniel Radcliffe in it. James McAvoy, I did. James McAvoy was in a movie called The Last King of Scotland with, oh God, he was on The Shield. The other guy, Forrest Whitaker. That I saw. My Corona. Magic. Oh my God. Magic got the AIDS with that level of intelligence. Well, hey, it's worked out well for him. He's got a huge following. Wish I could post dumb shit and have a big following like that. There's a lot of people posting dumb shit on social media. Thank you, My Corona. Won an Oscar for that role. Yeah, no, that was a big movie at the time. Anyway, I just noticed we are at 415 likes. You sons of bitches pulled it off. That means it is time to be the booker. I don't know how you do it.
Gentlemen, it is now time to
pull it out there at the end.
The booker.
They find a way. Therefore, we have to be the booker. Arabian Night watched Jason X today. Then you saw the greatest kill in the history of the Friday the 13th franchise. The liquid nitrogen kill. All right, so we land first. We're just starting, and we've already landed on choose two single stars to form a makeshift team. My favorite thing, makeshift tag teams. Okay. We have to make a brand new team here. This is exciting. Mike Arona says, No Holds Barred should have gotten an Oscar. No Holds Barred is a guilty pleasure of mine. It's a movie I know is bad, but I still like it. Austin Theory. We are creating a brand new team here. Two men that have never, ever teamed up before. Austin Theory and John Moxley. Okay, so we've created a brand new team. Now, Theory and Moxley are going to take on Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Hulk Hogan and John Moxley. Do you think that Hulk Hogan would ever wrestle John Moxley in one of John Moxley's specialty matches? I am trying to envision this, and you know what? I kind of want to see that. I kind of want to see John Moxley bust out the thumbtacks just to see the reaction that Hogan would have to it. We got thumbtacks. We got skewers. He's gonna try to pry Hogan's fingernails off his hand. Oh my God, Brutus with the scissors. I didn't even think about that. Poor Theory. Interesting match. All right, now on the women's side, we have Naomi. Feel the glow. Naomi is going to go one-on-one with Melina. It's interesting. You know, Melina is one of those divas from that era who doesn't get talked about. Like WWE doesn't acknowledge her. She may have been in a Royal Rumble one year, but she really doesn't get acknowledged or talked about. They just had Mickie James sit down for a whole retrospective, one of these like WWE little YouTube retrospectives that they do. And she was going through all of her different feuds with different people, and they just completely like ignored. Like Melina was like completely glossed over. I don't get it. She had some good matches during her run. She was very flexible. Remember that. And the main event. El Hijo del Vikingo, the former AAA mega champion who just went heel on the AAA show. They are embracing heel Vikingo. We have heel Vikingo. Oh my God. Against Oba Femi. Vikingo gonna die. Poor Vikingo. He doesn't know what's about to hit him. When are we gonna see Oba Femi? He's like waiting in the shadows. What are they waiting for? What moment are they waiting for to bring him up to the main roster? That's not gonna end well for Vikingo. We got a Sonic though. Look at that. We got a Sonic sweep. Kind of a weak one. I mean, there were a few matches I could have gone either way on, but I'm feeling generous tonight. So I was like, you know what? That match isn't too bad. And that match isn't too bad. That main event, actually, I think would actually be a very good main event. Fucking Vikingo bumping all over the place for Oba. He's wrestling Omos. Where is he? He's wrestling Omos. Well, I saw they had a confrontation on like an NXT house show. So are they wrestling on a house show or are they wrestling on NXT? I saw Omos on social media was offering his services to members of the roster who need some protection. I don't know if he's just kind of creating his own gimmick just to get something going or if this is an actual idea they have for him, but I think that could work. Well, look at that. We ended up doing Be the Booker and we got a clean sweep. And guess what? The next time I'm live with you is my very last time live here for the month of October, and it just so happens to be Halloween. So I hope that you will join me, because we're going to have some fun on Friday night. We're going to have a spooky edition of the SmackDown post-show. And then, of course, on Saturday, we have Saturday night's main event. And I'll be live on Saturday night for that. And then Sound Off episode 936 is coming up this weekend, so you're going to have a lot of shows. I get a rare night off tomorrow. And then there's a lot of shows coming up this weekend, so I hope you guys are going to join me for that. But again, first, Halloween, Friday night. This is where you need to be. I should watch the 1987 vampire movie Near Dark. Okay, I've never heard of that one. I saw The Lost Boys. You want a good vampire movie? There you go, The Lost Boys. You go watch that and then come back here and I'll see you guys no matter how good or bad SmackDown may be. You could always rely on the Sound Off. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great night, and I will see you for the SmackDown show, post-show, Friday night for Halloween. Until then, take care, guys.